It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the cinemas and on DVD. Get ready for...
Wait for it!
Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever. Yes.
Let's find out how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
And I can't stand him.
Hello there, film lovers. Welcome to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD to the Point and WFYI.org. If you have a question or comment, you can email me at msocey, that's M-S-O-C-E-Y, at WFYI.org. Also on Facebook, also on Twitter, at Matthew Soze. Show is available as a podcast, it's also available on iTunes, and we have a blog which you can check out at
filmsociology.tumblr.com.
Voice you heard is Kobe Slagle.
Yep.
Very excited about this weekend's football festivities.
Stoked.
You're like
98% of college males.
Stoked. That's an Onion article. And we have company, but Kobe, I'm going to go off the rails a little bit. Could you play, but by the way, nice old school intro.
Thank you.
Because of the company I have and the company I keep, could you play my wife's version of the show intro, please? Could have the gentlemen here have worked with the lovely Mrs. Soze, the most patient woman on earth. Would you share that for them, please?
Indeed.
Thank you.
It's time to hear what's good, what's bad, and what's ugly at the multiplexes and at the art house.
Warehouse, farmhouse, hen house, outhouse, or doghouse in that area.
You'll also hear about new and old films on Blu-ray and on DVD. Plus, you'll hear all the latest Hollywood gossip.
I don't care!
Okay, maybe not the latter, but it is time for Film Sociology with WFYI's film guru.
Kaiser Soze!
No, that's Matthew Soze.
It's such a fine line between stupid and clever, yes.
Let's see how thin the line is. Here's your host, Matthew Soze.
Cool, two intros in one show. I get to do my air drums and my
and
air
keyboard. Fender Rhodes. So,
yeah.
Joining me in studio from Beacon Boards, Eddie Curry and Jeff Stockberger.
Let's try this again.
Yeah, they've worked with my wife, so I guess I said keep working with my wife, so she'll do less stuff like this.
Oh no, she's very good at that.
I know.
Voice.
She's equity. I almost had to pay her for this. So I got that radio clause. Anyway,
it's been costing her for a number of years. How long
15.
Have you been married?
Yeah, thank you very much. Anyway, Eddie
a
and
high
Jeff.
High price that lady paid.
Eddie and Jeff are playing in Beef and Board's production of The Odd Couple, which opened last week?
The 27th.
27th,
yeah.
Okay. So and
right after Christmas.
Yeah.
Did you guys have to cancel any productions? Performances this week?
No. Not yet.
You're like the male.
Goodness.
And you're male.
Yes, the show must go
the
on.
Show must go on.
Yeah.
So, it was funny because I. What? Did you. You came into work, right?
What?
Did you come into work this week?
Yeah.
I did not. I have a 13 year old and Lynn was at a conference. So it was like.
It was on a 2 hour delay yesterday. But
WFYI was?
Yes.
We you had to tell Diane Reem, not yet, you can't go on yet.
It's too cold,
exactly. So, well, it was weird. It was like 2 days of hibernation with a 13-year-old. So, that was odd. Anyway, hi guys.
Yeah, I've been hearing it's different for parents with daughters. They go stir crazier fast.
A little bit. I had to make sure she had some time in her room to do drawings, and then she had to. You can't sit on the couch and watch Nickelodeon or Disney or whatever. Now she's into anime, so we had the fun double feature of Four Weddings and a Funeral and Inception.
Wow,
not in that order. And then, yeah, so anyway, we did okay. We survived. So.
Excellent.
But the show's going well?
It's going great.
It's going real good.
Now, I'm curious, we'll get into the show a little bit later on, but have you guys done The Odd Couple before?
I have done The Odd Couple
before.
Well,
I've done it before, but I haven't played Oscar before.
Jeff directed. Have you been in it before?
Yeah, the last time we did. When you,
oh, that's right. Yeah. You were one
I
of the
I was in that show,
players.
Remember?
Yeah. Well, when was the last time Beef and Boards did it?
99.
Okay, so good.
Long time ago.
So ready for a new one.
Exactly. Yep.
Very cool. Well, we'll get to that in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But first, new in theaters this week.
Tooken 3.
Still taking. Still.
Liam Neeson.
I didn't see it. However, it's rough because I like Liam Neeson, and if Fox is going to just offer you an obscene amount of money to do two more of those, who are we to say no?
No judging.
I was kind of surprised when the first one came out that it
took off the way it did.
Yeah,
I'll tell you why it worked. Because I have the film show.
is why we're here.
That's
folks.
Why we're here. If that film, that exact same, if everything, the whole cast, the director, everything, but if you had Steven Seagal or Jean-Claude Van Damme or some monosyllabic knuckle dragger, nobody would care.
Nope.
But you had an actor who's got some depth, he's got some gravitas, and he's got some chops, that's why it works. And the fact that he has become, I think, this generation's Connery as far as older action star.
Right.
I mean, Harrison Ford had that for a while and has kind of drifted. But so I think that's why it works. Do you,
I guess so, yeah. I can see that.
We like Liam Neeson.
like Liam Neeson.
We do here.
That's what we need. We need our approved actor, director. List
like our guys,
yeah.
Like your is the
Christoph Waltz, Liam Neeson.
Yes, this is the opposite of Kobe's list. The list of actors he does not like.
Yeah,
the list, capital T, capital L.
Well, didn't Pierre Morel direct that first one? Is that correct?
I believe so.
Yeah. Well, see, but he's great because he did District 13, which I also liked. Where Brick Houses, which it came out recently, and I just saw.
And District 13 is my favorite French martial arts buddy picture.
Yeah, well, there's so many of them, I know.
That's a huge aisle in the video store. But it is. No, but so the fact that he's doing these action films, and I haven't seen all of them. I haven't seen all of Liam's action. I'm not burnt out on him as of yet, but I'm really and I think he's working with Scorsese, which will help balance out the ridiculous amounts of money to beat up people and talk on the phone. It reminded me of, when Laurence Olivier did all those cameos in the 70s, you kind of knew he was doing that to support the National Theater, and De Niro in the 90s and the aughts because he's trying to get the Tribeca Film Festival. I was like, are we doing if he was running a theater in Dublin and putting on Ulysses for these ridiculous he's not doing that.
No.
But he's why he's taking these? Because they're asking him to.
Yeah.
And he said yes.
I mean, that's what all actors, aspire to, is just to be able to pick and choose what you want to do.
I have never turned down a big dollar film.
Yeah, no.
You have not.
No, I've never been offered one, but I've never turned one down.
I saw that coming.
Yes, we all did. So anyway, no, we didn't see it, but lots of people will. It'll probably make the top money this weekend. But opening in theaters this weekend is a film that many folks, I'm sure, are going to be talking about when the nominations come out, called Selma. And it's, of course, about Martin Luther King and the whole incident in Selma itself, not the complete biopic on this. And watching it, and I saw it this morning, first off, major kudos to the cast, and I think there's been a few off non Oscars that have given it for best ensemble. David Oyelowo, I hope I'm saying that right. He's in that guy category, and he's also gotten enough notice for playing King that we got to start memorizing how to pronounce the names, like Pete Postlewaite.
Yeah.
Or Christoph Waltz.
Or Cheadle Okafor.
Don Cheadle, yeah. Or Sophie Okonedo, who played Cheadle's wife in Hotel Rwanda. Yeah, that was another one. Like, how do you say that? I'm an NPR. I got to say that right. But it's about the voter registration and the marches that had to go down. And some of the conflicts that happened while preparing the marches. And there hasn't been a biopic on Martin Luther King since Paul Winfield. There was one. There was a miniseries for TV, I think, in the late 70s. So there have been films featuring King, but not of this size. And one of the things that it does do is show some of wrinkles in the armor and other mixed metaphors of, you know, he was not a perfect guy. There isn't an angelic glow over him. IRT had a play that David Anderson, The Mountaintop, Top of the Mountain.
That's cool.
And that was a fictitious event of his last night in Memphis in the hotel room, and that showed him as a flawed character, and that's what this film does. But as far as the organizing and trying to rally the troops and be with his family and deal with Lyndon Johnson, played by Tom Wilkinson, and dealing with the outside world, so it's a really good film. It's not perfect. There are, guess what, white folks, not nice, not good folks. So, and that's but there are some fun moments of when the people of the cloth of all colors come down from Boston, Detroit, and from the northern states to help out with the march. The scenes, the conflicts with the police are brutal. And not as long and drawn out as, say, 12 Years a Slave. And there's a few slow motion moments that, well, anytime you do that, I'm gonna throw the Sam Peckinpah card and say, we've seen that. So those moments, and there are times with, and I think this is gearing toward a younger crowd, there are some actors that turn into textbooks. Or, you know, little captain exposition as far as to get people caught up. Mm-hmm. Those of us who actually paid attention in history class and know this stuff, I'm like, yeah, we got it. So, and I'm being careful with these because I don't want to dump on the film and make it sound like that I'm insensitive. But from a piece of art standpoint, there are those moments. You also have Tim Roth playing George Wallace. So, he does the best he can with the material. There's one scene in particular that feels really forced between Lyndon Johnson and George Wallace, but it does also capture the amount of influence that the president and J. Edgar Hoover, played by Dylan Baker, there's a lot of times where they will go to a scene and you'll see the presidential stamp and a login of a phone conversation that was made or a meeting that was done. So it gives the appearance that they've always been under surveillance, and that hasn't been done before. So I think it's worth checking out. Like I said, it's not perfect. I wouldn't be surprised if this gets a Best Picture nomination. It's not my choice, but I still think it's a solid film nonetheless. So
now that was a good movie.
Yes, it was. And other folks like Giovanni Ribisi is in this.
Oh, it's good cast.
Yeah, really good cast. And my favorite bit of stunt casting, Martin Sheen's in it. And, of course, he's a judge. Cuba Gooding Jr. Yeah, there's some familiar folks in this. Also out on also out in theaters, I should say, is Inherent Vice, which is the new film from Paul Thomas Anderson. This is the one that stars Joaquin Phoenix. There's Reese Witherspoon. There's Josh Brolin. And it's funny, we saw this, the critics, we saw this about a month ago. And so to think back about it, it's set in Southern California in 1970. Phoenix plays a pot-smoking, among other things, gumshoe who is taking a case of an ex-girlfriend of his who is looking for her missing man who happens to be married to somebody else. And there's a search for a very rich, wealthy businessman and who's going to get the rights to his wealth when it's all said and done. He has a lot of run-ins with a very straight-laced, buzz-cut Josh Brolin, who's probably one of the funnier things of the film. It's based on a novel, which I have not read because it's not book sociology. But as soon as I saw it, there was a lot of comparisons to The Big Lebowski. And some folks were calling it Paul Thomas Anderson's The Big Lebowski because you have a stoner protagonist who's trying to solve a mystery of sorts. And the difference is while the dude, Jeff Bridges in The Big Lebowski, kind of stumbles upon his situation by accident, the Joaquin Phoenix character, Doc, this is his job. And so it follows a lot of the moments you expect in a detective story, the meeting in the office. He has an office in a doctor's office. You know, so there's the semi-sassy secretary played by Maya Rudolph. So there's, the meetings with the secretary, the run-ins with the police. There's the meeting with the eccentric businessman. In this case, Martin Short. Nice to see Martin Short doing something besides appearing on talk shows. playing this kind of very successful dentist with a woman and a drug problem. So it's more of a if you remember the Robert Altman film The Long Goodbye with Elliot Gould as Philip Marlowe. It's more like The Long Goodbye than I would say The Big Lebowski. It's about 2 hours and 20 minutes. It could have been tightened up a little bit. And I think with Paul Thomas Anderson, we expect major hits from him. Not necessarily of a financial standpoint, but There Will Be Blood, Magnolia, Boogie Nights. And this one, I would say, is a minor piece. I liked it, but I didn't love it. So, and it's nice to see Joaquin Phoenix in another different role, because I know the last time he worked with Paul Thomas Anderson was The Master and then the whole rap thing. But anyway, we're past that. And by the way, Reese Witherspoon plays an assistant DA. So, yes, there is a Walk the Line reunion if you really needed one. So those are out there. That's worth checking out. That's worth checking out. That's worth checking out. Kobe, do you have? No, we don't.
Yeah. Well,
why don't you just play the one you just played?
Okay.
Now that was a good movie.
We have no rating system, but we like sound clips.
Yeah.
You all right over there?
No. That's not what I said.
Well, it was like, yeah, it's Lebowski, but it's not Lebowski.
No, it's not as good as Lebowski, not even close, but it's worth checking out if you've seen everything else.
Okay.
Now you're being...
It's a nice... way to spend 2 hours in a movie theater that you won't wish you got back.
Actually, that's pretty good.
Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah.
All right. So,
I accept that one.
That's good. All right. Not bad. Cope, what is, do you know what's happening at your alma mater?
Yes, I do. We are back in session.
This is
tonight.
IU Cinema,
yep,
by the way.
IU Cinema tonight at 7 o'clock from 1992, A Tale of Winter in their International Art House series.
Okay.
Tomorrow, Saturday at 3 o'clock, January 10th, we have A Summer's Tale from 1996. Foreign languages, comedy, drama, romance.
Thing.
Yeah. And then at 7 o'clock on Saturday night, A Girl Walks Home Alone at Midnight. Foreign language, horror, romance, thriller from last year.
Oh, always good to show on a college campus.
Mm-hmm. And then Sunday, January 11th at 3 o'clock from 1992, again, A Tale of Winter.
Okay. A couple other notes, if you're not going to Beef and Boards, of course. at the Indiana State Museum in their IMAX Theater tonight and tomorrow night at 7 p.m., and this was one that didn't make the top 10, but it made the honorable mentions. It's my favorite horror film of the year, called The Babadook.
I just saw it.
You did?
I did.
Did you like it?
I did.
Kobe? I will say, I know, because Mr. Slagle here, not a horror movie fan,
nope.
Not a thriller. I get it.
But it's not, when you call it a horror movie, it's
the scariest film. It's my favorite scary film of the year, I guess.
It's disturbing, but it's not Freddy Krueger. It's not, you know what I mean?
Right.
When you think of your standard horror movies and
it is unsettling, but I think that's also in Kobe's caveat of no.
Yeah.
No, it's freaky. No, it's an Australian film about a mother and a son,
mm-hmm.
and they have a book, and the book, it's a little dark. It's kind of Edward Gorey-esque, and it keeps popping up, and odd things start to happen. Not horror movie things happen.
Just odd things?
Yes, odd things and disturbing things. And at first, you think it's the kid. And then maybe it's the mother, and then maybe the house is possessed, or maybe it's just a scary book that's possessed. And usually when they're throwing all sorts, they throw like dozens of red herrings at you. But because it's down to about four, and there are four genres we've seen before, the disturbed kid, the disturbed mom, mm-hmm. the haunted house, or just the scary object, not deathbed, the bed that eats people. Thank you, Patton Oswalt. But it does keep you guessing throughout. And at first, you don't like. This is a kid that
he's a handful.
Yeah, exactly.
Let's put it that way.
Yeah, there's a meltdown at a grocery store happening near you, I guess. This is a nice way of putting it. And then to see what happens with the transformation of the mother. And it's solid work from the two of them.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it's something. Well, you're not going to check it out, Kobe,
you can tell she studied with Lars von Trier.
Lars von Trier.
Yeah.
Yes. Everyone's favorite angst-ridden Danish filmmaker.
Exactly.
Speaking of which, I always refer to Whiplash, my number three film of the year, is if Lars von Trier directed Fame.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh.
It's that good.
I have to see that.
Yeah, you have to. So, and there's plenty out there, ladies and gentlemen. There's no excuse to go. This is the time. This is the grown-up movie season mm-hmm. that the critics have been clamoring for, because most of the stuff out there is really solid. So you have no excuse to and get out. It's not that cold anymore.
And in our Get Out, It's Not That Cold Anymore series, we yes. have at the IMA tonight at 8 o'clock, their winter night series. They're showing The Wizard of Oz. And if you come before the showing, they're going to sync it up to Pink Floyd's Dark Side of the Moon.
Are they really?
Yep.
Wow.
I don't think they're probably not going to run through the whole thing. But
And they're probably not going to hand out the concessions that are proper.
It's going to be a crazy, different crowd at the IMA tonight.
It could be, actually. That's pretty good.
Wizard of Oz tonight, and then the Winter Night series continues next week with... Oh, I just had it, and I
is
forget
it Fargo?
What it was. Spirited Away.
Oh, gosh.
Fargo's 2 weeks away.
Emma's going to want to go to that. Something like, we'll figure that out. Anyway. Also, yeah, so Babadook is, yeah, this weekend at the IMAX. Also, at the Artcraft Theater in Franklin tonight at 7:30 and tomorrow and Saturday at 2 and 7:30 p.m. Because it would have been his 80th birthday this week, they're showing probably the best of the lightweight Frothy Elvis musicals, Viva Las Vegas. And there's one great reason to watch Las Vegas, and Margaret, you're welcome. I saw that. Well, my mother was a huge Elvis fan. I got to see all of Elvis's movies. Thanks, Mom. And yeah, I saw Viva Las Vegas at about 6. And I had no latency period. That explains a lot. I didn't know what to do on a date with Anne Margaret, but I knew I wanted to hang out. So thanks for that. All right, let's take a short break, and we'll talk about what's new on DVD and Blu-ray, and we'll talk with Jeff and Eddie about The Odd Couple and movies and all sorts of good stuff, because this is the film show. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD To The Point and WFYI.org.
Are either one of these any good?
I don't watch movies.
Well, have you heard anything about either one of them?
I find it's best to stay out of other people's affairs. You know who I can do without? I can do without the people in the video store.
Which ones?
All of them.
What would you get for a 6-year-old boy who chronically wets his bed?
So, do you have any new movies in?
Do you have that one with that guy who was in that movie that was out last year?
They never rent quality flicks. They always pick the most intellectually devoid movie on the racks.
Ooh, Navy SEALs!
It's like in order to join, they have to have an IQ less than their shoe size.
Just go open the video store.
Yeah, open the video store!
Blockbuster Video! Wow, what a difference!
Well, in case you didn't see it, here it is again.
Welcome back to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org. Matthew Sosi hanging out with Kobe Slagle. We have Eddie Curry and Jeff Stockberger from Beef and Boards hanging out there. Of course, Felix and Oscar in The Odd Couple. We were playing the DVD intro, and when we got to the point of you have that one movie with that one guy, Eddie pointed at himself.
That's, I love that movie.
Oh, good. Thank God. I thought you were like, you know, the. You couldn't put a sentence together as far as describing something.
No, I just I don't get to go to that many movies, and so I don't commit names to memory like you guys do. And I like
it's called
that one
nerdism.
Exactly. You guys are nerds, right? That's what you're saying. Not me, right?
No, you're fine, sir.
Okay, thank you.
No, most definitely, you're the most dashing Felix on the planet.
I look good today. That's all I'm going to say.
Yes, you're both in your Colts blue.
Yep.
That's terrific. Yeah. Jeff, put it away. anyway, all right. New on DVD and Blu-ray are a couple of films that will get some probably award notice. At least, well, definitely I know for me, the top film this week, which was the IFJA's pick for top film of the year. And it was number 2 on my top 10 list, and that's Richard Linklater's Boyhood.
Ooh, I want to see that. I have not seen it.
Well,
yet.
You have a chance on Tuesday when it comes out.
Hurrah!
And it's... I know I think the Golden Globes are this weekend, and I know that's up for Best Drama, and that's probably got a good chance of. I hope it does, because Richard Linklater. I also got a feeling Linklater's had a really solid career, and it might be that kind of. Sometimes award shows say, "Well, he or she, they're due. Let's give it to him." And this is a fascinating project.
Yeah, a movie like what 12 years.
12 years. So yeah. Imagine seeing the same people. Well, and they only filmed for like 2 or 3 days. And then they do it again the following year.
It's amazing.
So the commitment of that is intriguing, but it's a really solid film about a family as you see them literally growing up. The parents are separated, played by Patricia Arquette and Ethan Hawke. Linklater's daughter plays the daughter, and Elijah Smith plays the son. He's the kid on the poster. And it's one of the most naturalistic teenage performances. This is not a movie teenager. This is not John Hughes. This is not this is not TV teendom. Because there are some years he's outgoing and other years he's introverted, and sometimes in the same scene you can get those because they're teenagers. They're unpredictable. I know. It runs about 2 hours and 45 minutes, and it could have been longer, and that's a rarity for me to say of a picture like that. And some people, you know, there are some plot points and some characters that come and go, but kind of what the point was of the film is life is like that. Patricia Arquette goes through a series of men over the span of 12 years. Some get more screen time than others, and I think that's probably what we do with everybody else as far as our own memory. So... Definitely check that out. The other one that I know is getting some buzz is Get On Up, the James Brown a biopic with Chadwick Boseman. And I think if anything else, Chadwick will probably, if he gets acting award nominations, it'll be him more than the film itself. Film is good, not great. It's a music biopic, and I always quote, whenever it's a biopic, I always quote my buddy Laura Jansen, who says, "I don't like biopics because they're movies about people." And what she's saying is it's the biopic format. We've seen it a thousand times. And also the fact that if you haven't rented it, you should really rent Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story with John C. Reilly, because that film single-handedly destroys the music biopic and biopics as a general. And what Get On, to the credit of Get On Up, they do tinker with the timeline at the very beginning, almost to the point that it was kind of hard to follow, because it starts with the infamous 80s car chase. Then it goes back to him being a child, and then it goes to the 60s. And it felt like they were trying to go against the biopic format, almost to the fact that it almost derailed itself. Mm. But the music's great. He's really solid. And so at the very least, that overcomes if you have a mundane storyline, but you have really solid acting, I'll still give it a go. And then that's it really for new titles, because the other stuff I have not seen. And well, is anybody going to rent the Nicolas Cage remake of Left Behind?
Oh, no.
So, because apparently, I'm glad to know Nicolas Cage is going to improve what Kirk Cameron already originated. So thanks there.
well, that's, he should win a Razzie. I'm hearing he's
yeah. I'm
high
waiting for
the
we will get the
awards.
Razzie awards. Yeah.
This is pretty much the worst video ever made.
Nice old one there. Haven't heard that in a while. So that's out there. Also, No Good Deed with Taraji P. Henson and Idris Elba. And Atlas Shrugged Part 3.
Oh, my.
Still shrugging.
After all these years?
There's an Abdul-Hakim Shabazz comment, but I won't do it. And then Suzanne George, our girl, her guy's film, The Guest, is out on Blu-ray. So that's about it. So, no, just rent Boyhood and get on up and go see grown-up movies and go see Beef and Boris production, The Odd Couple. You'll be fine. Everything's good. A couple of old titles from 1980. And so I asked the question, do you need this film on Blu-ray? Do you need from 1988 Working Girl?
No.
Okay.
It's also an art film.
It's not an art film.
Yeah.
It has Melanie Griffith's original face and Sigourney Weaver.
That's the only thing it really has going for it is her original face.
Original face. Well, and also, Mike Nichols directed that. We miss him.
Yes.
But I remember it's a good film. It's not a great film. And also, that was a film that Harrison Ford was allowed to do comedy, and it looked like Harrison Ford actually gave a damn while working on the film. So that's what we do now with Harrison. Like, look him in the eyes. It's like, do you care? You do that with him. You do that with Bruce Willis. And then 20 years ago, you looked at Robert Downey Jr. to see if he was high while making the film. So, also from the early aughts, Charlie Wilson's War. Fun. If anything else, the scene with Philip Seymour Hoffman getting fired and the scene with John Slattery, it's a lot of fun. We can't play it on the radio, but it's really good. And then from 1978, do you remember The Boys from Brazil?
Oh, yeah.
Laurence Olivier, mm-hmm. Gregory Peck. Yeah. So going after Dr. Mengele, played by Gregory Peck, and the dogs, really disturbing stuff.
So those are all titles that you say, absolutely, you have to have them.
No, you don't. Not really. Okay. Although I will say Criterion did put out, I think it's the mid to late 60s, the Japanese film Sword of Doom, which has Toshirô Mifune in a cameo role. And anyway, if you're into sword play, not sword buckling. Not sword buckling. I accidentally said sword buckling once on the show. So, yeah, it happens. You know what it is? It's live radio, almost. So, guys, with The Odd Couple, which is happening at Beef and Boards, is running through when?
February 8th.
And Eddie is playing Felix, and
correct.
Jeff is playing Oscar.
Correct.
Why do this show now? First off, I'm really glad you guys are doing it because I've seen, I think, 3 female productions of it.
Oh, my.
And it's been a while since I've actually seen the original on stage. I think you said it's been 20 years, almost 20 years since the last time you guys did this script?
15.
Okay, 15. Sorry. Yeah. So why do the show now?
Well, Jeff and I have been doing shows in this January time slot together for past few seasons, Run for Your Wife and Don't Dress for Dinner, and mm-hmm. last year we did Lend Me a Tenor. This seems to be the perfect show for two besties off stage to play two besties on stage. And
without driving each other crazy.
Although Jeff is not my bestie off stage or on stage, it seemed to be a good fit. No. So no, mm-hmm. he is. He's my best friend. it seemed to be the right fit for the two of us, and we resonate for some reason. I don't know why, but we resonate with our audience. They like us.
For some reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I
they
can
don't
see
know
that.
Any better, I guess. Yeah. But we love
I
them.
I can't figure it out, but happy
so,
it's happening.
So it seemed to be the right fit and the right time for it because when we first opened, it was such a physical workout that in the dressing room, we were saying to ourselves, those people are wondering when those two old men are going to die.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
the window's closing a little bit
yes.
on the physical
comedy. We
needed
to comedy. Get that done
you know what
it's too late.
You know what this
right.
means? Because once you're too old to do this, you guys could do the Sunshine Boys.
Well, there you go.
There you go.
I'm
all for
you
that.
You know, I did the Sunshine Boys when I was 23. So
did you play the nephew or were you one of the guys?
No, I was one of the guys.
Where
I
did
played,
you do that?
I played Willie. I played
you played
Walter Matthau role.
Yes,
yeah.
I just want to be the one that lies in the bed most of
that's
the time.
That's Willie. So.
Yeah, see, that's,
that's the second half.
That's
yeah.
my kind of show.
Yeah. Well, the nurse comes in and she's usually.
Well, then, Jeff, I don't think even Boris' production of Whose Life Is It Anyway is going to happen anytime soon. That's,
maybe the musical comedy version.
Life.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, I did that at Shawnee Summer Theater.
You did Whose Life?
No.
Oh.
I just do Whose Life Is It in my real life. But, no, I did that in the summer of 92.
I think
it was a long time ago.
I played the nephew in The Sunshine Boys at Mud Creek. Gosh, it was probably the early aughts.
I love that show.
It's a fun show.
And I look forward to doing it again when the time is right, next time.
Yes, of course. And I did The Odd Couple in high school. I played Roy.
Roy.
And that was, of course, I'm 16, 17, which just screams New York card player.
Right.
And
had you played poker before?
Yeah, I did. We actually did. It was funny because I got to witness in the 80s the shift from poker to euchre.
Yes.
I never got euchre. Never could
Eddie's
play.
Euchre, still don't?
That, no.
Are you from Michigan originally?
Yes.
Oh, that's a big game up there, too.
So is Ted Nugent music. But yes. I'd rather listen to Ted than play euchre. I just never got into it. But I think also my dad's side of the family's from Jersey, so I'm sure that's more old school card playing. But I know they play euchre.
Well, we found it interesting in rehearsal when blocking those scenes with.
Do you
poker
pay attention
players.
To the cards?
Well, you
should kind of have to because I mean it's in the dialogue. I mean, from their betting and what the cards they have. So yeah,
so there was a learning curve.
There were fun moments when you got a good hand during rehearsal. I had a good hand last night.
Yeah, I did too.
I had two aces and two kings.
Yeah.
And,
but if I was really playing poker, I would get terrible hands. But yeah, when I'm
exactly
on stage, I get great hands.
Now, one of the selling points of the show, because I remember again when we did it, how messy is the set in Act One?
I'll let Jeff speak to that because he's the one that does most of the messing up.
I do, yes. I'm most of the mess with the beers flying and the chips and the pickles.
It's
pretty messy. Yeah, they do a really good job, I think.
Oh, you don't do it single-handedly?
Oh, no.
Starts out pretty messy.
It's about 3 in the afternoon. Just go over there.
Exactly.
And it's really interesting how the props mistress has it set up. Because
salute to her.
It's easily struck away during the blackout there at the end of this first scene.
Nice.
And your shelves are like two-sided, so you have a dirty side and a clean side with all the same stuff.
That's smart stagecraft right there.
Keeps things moving.
We had a set in which we had little holes in the behind couches and things, and we would just kind of brush everything out. So when we tore the set down, once we got the planks off, there's a god awful thing, and we were very thankful there were no rats or other woodland creatures milling around under our set.
Well, we have we've had some cards up in the lamp for up in the
chandelier,
up in the chandelier above the poker table. We've had to retrieve those a couple of times already.
Nice.
So
just let everybody know who else is in the show.
Darren Morrell, he plays
Vinny.
And Dave Ruark
is Roy.
And
you got Craig Underwood.
Yep,
he's playing Murray
the cop, and then Michael Davis,
my onstage big brother. Yes.
And then of course we have two beautiful ladies as the Pigeon Sisters,
and played by
Carrie Fedor.
Ah, yes,
and Aaron Cohenour.
Very cool.
Both of them tall, statuesque, beautiful. Fabulous actresses.
Do you have a dictionary to stand on?
Well, that's the comedy of it.
Yes, yep. You are. He's definitely the shortest one on stage when it's the four of us.
No, you're not, sir. You're just fine.
I stand on the chair and I do
and
fine.
By your man.
That's right. That's right. But I get to sit right between those two girls for an entire scene. I have the best seat in the house.
No smothering jokes there.
No.
See, when I was 11. I remember seeing pictures of Dudley Moore dating Susan Anton. Uh-huh. That was a huge influence.
Maybe
that was very inspirational.
Maybe that's why I like Dudley Moore so much, because he's another short guy with tall girls.
Kobe, you should look up Susan Anton. This is the part of the show where I have Kobe Googling vintage chicks. Yeah, look up Susan Anton. 6'3", Amazon.
Anton,
yeah.
Yes.
Fun stuff. And so the speed of the show. I mean, have you noticed from the first time you've done it to now as far as rhythm with you guys?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Well, the dialogue is so built, you know, with that old Borscht Belt style of comedy where it's
no
just,
drum kit, though.
No. Yes.
Darn
without
close.
The ba-dum-bum. Yeah. But it's all, but you know, just the rhythm of it.
There's a cadence to his writing.
Yep.
And it took a while to get that because, you know, our rehearsals processes are expedited.
Mm-hmm.
things are much faster. And
With the weird, the way the Christmas fell and all that, we
New Year's, we were doing two shows and then taking a day off, and two more shows and taking a day off. So we finally got to do four shows in a row.
Yeah, we were really happy. Oh, finally.
Need the audience to help inform you as an actor in an ensemble about pace and what's working and what isn't. So once we finally got four in a row, now we feel like we're kind of cooking with gas.
Yep, finding our groove.
Excellent. There's a reason why he had five shows on Broadway at one time. Not a bad streak. Not a bad streak whatsoever.
I like Brighton Beach Memoirs. I mean, I like them all.
Have you guys done Brighton Beach?
No, we haven't. But I have career, yeah.
Nice. Something else I'm curious about, especially with a show like The Odd Couple, is because it can be so fast, but then also the moment where you have to wait for the audience's laughter to die down. Because there's a lot of, I'm especially thinking of the fight near the end with you two. Spoiler alert on a 40-year-old, 50-year-old, whatever. By the way, Rosebud was a sled.
Oh, no. Going to watch that tonight.
And Rosebud was made out of people. Anyway, but I mean, how, as far as activity, I mean, what kind of business do you guys do when the laughter is that big? You know, with a television, you can cut, you can snip. Even if they do say it's recorded in front of a live audience, but how do you keep the momentum going? Yeah, I use momentum, Kobe. When the laughter is that big,
oh, I just enjoy the opportunity.
Yeah,
to breathe.
Just to rest for a minute. Yeah, no, it's great.
You go for the laughs, not because you feed off laughs, just because you need that break to breathe.
It's funny because it's true.
Yeah, well, and this one is there should be a little something for everybody in this show. So you should go check that out.
Both of us are physical actors as well, and so we have found physical places for it to be funny as well.
Right.
And that's been the part that we've learned as we've gone along where those are.
Mm-hmm.
And that's been a lot of fun, too.
How's your linguine throwing arm?
Oh, no, it's good. it was a plate chatterer last night.
Man, that plate broke into a 50 pieces.
On stage?
No, it goes.
He throws it off stage.
Okay, that's another technical aspect, because especially with the plate and the cup, how do you do it?
The cup does not break.
It doesn't. I throw
spoiler
that
alert, the
so
cup
hard.
Does not
well,
break.
It, for that moment, it doesn't have to,
no.
really.
That's
better,
what's funny about it.
It's better if it doesn't.
Right.
You know, I try and put as much energy into throwing that cup not very hard as I possibly can.
Yes, it's a pretty throw. It is.
Jim Palmer has nothing to worry about.
No.
Juan Marichal.
No.
No.
50 Cent doesn't have anything to worry
about.
Oh.
There was, ladies and gentlemen, if anything else from this experience, go to YouTube and check out, just do a search of worst throwing, worst pitches.
Yep.
Because there was one, I showed Emma, actually. It was Tiffany Thiessen, Mrs. John Legend.
Oh.
Had done one. Well, it was because she was hosting the New Year's Eve thing, and Lynn's like, I don't know any of these people. Who is this? And then Olbermann was making fun of her. The tips were never stand on the rubber. You're not a pitcher. Get as close to the catcher as you can. Scuff the ball like there's no tomorrow, and aim high, because if it bounces, you're going to get booed. So, 50 Cent, Mayor of Cincinnati, Mariah Carey, they're all out there. They're all terrible. So. There's that.
And Eddie Curry.
And me.
You threw out a first. Oh, wait,
no,
and the cup.
No,
you
the
did
cup,
have, you do
the
have the
cup.
Cup. So there's, that's good. Now, remind me again. You've done one way, shape, or form of Odd Couple how many times?
I played Felix the last time we did it, and Doug Stark was Oscar.
Okay.
Jeff was sitting at the poker table.
Yes, I was
Doug
speed.
Stark directed this time, and, and Jeff stepped in as Oscar.
Cool. One of the most, I had this fun moment, speaking of the Odd Couple, my grandparents, my dad's side of the family is from Jersey, and they used to tell me in my teen years about taking the train from Trenton to New York. And that's where I found out that my grandparents had an element of cool to them, because they got to go to New York. They got to see Benny Goodman. They got to see Duke Ellington. They got to see Count Basie. And they went to all those Broadway shows in the 50s and 60s. And my grandparents got to see the original run of The Odd Couple.
We were just talking that we were born about 20
years
too
late.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, Walter Matthau and Art Carney. Oh. And I would love to have seen what Art had done with this. And I know why they cast who they cast for the picture. I get it. You know, it could have been one of the great what could have beens, I guess. But it was just intriguing. In fact, I remember seeing a picture of Carney throwing the cup. And it's just hysterical. Very fun stuff. How clean and how messy are you guys?
In real life?
Yes, in real life.
I'll let Jeff answer that.
I am a relatively neat person. I'm not really sloppy like Oscar, but he wins. He's the neat one.
Okay, so it's
more about neat. It's not clean. I can deal with not necessarily clean, but everything has its place.
Everything has its place.
Like this show.
We just can't say where that place is. But
No, you cannot.
even my dressing room spot, things are in a particular spot.
There's a way to do it.
Okay. Right.
Where I can go many different ways as long as it's relatively organized.
Drives me when they return shirts from laundry and they have them hanging the wrong direction.
This is
what we're talking about. See, I can't claim any of that.
Okay, the toilet paper roll.
Yep.
Well, I'm with you on that.
Over. Yeah, you got to have it
but
over.
But what's more important is release it before when you put it in there.
Get
it
off. Go ahead and get it started.
Because, man, that's hard work getting that when you need it.
With that angle, yeah, reaching.
Exactly.
Reaching on radio is always good. wow, that's going to be several.
When I was in radio, yes. And I was at the radio station all by myself because my shift was 3 a.m. to 12.
Lost if, art, by the way.
If you heard American Pie, you knew what I needed to do because that song lasted 11 minutes.
That was 11. Yeah. American Pie, Stairway to Heaven.
Yeah.
Whipping Post.
American Pie meant I had way too much coffee and about 5:30 in the morning. It was.
Where did
was
you do a, overnight?
Terre Haute in Terre Haute.
Really?
The station at that time was WMGI.
Okay.
But it had just switched from being a rock and roll station to an adult contemporary station.
Right.
And they were still running Wolfman Jack top. 50 or top 100 or something. And they came on vinyl records, that show.
Yes.
And a script, and you would run the show. And so one morning, there was a knock on the door, and it was we called them Hoshans, a local fella, who wanted to meet Wolfman Jack.
Oh, gosh.
And he wouldn't go away.
Until you... So it was like your American Graffiti moment.
It was scary. I called Terre Haute's finest to come and talk to the
Did
guy.
You show him the record to hear?
I did. I brought the record up.
Didn't believe you.
No. I was blocking him from meeting Wolfman.
That's okay. There's partially a reason why our studios are up on the second floor because we like to look down. No, we don't. We're kidding. But yeah, less window knocking when we're trying to do stuff on the air. I did a show. Actually, I did The King and I with Michael. I'll get to my Michael Davis story in a little bit. But I had an actor there who was an old community theater war horse. And he was talking to me about radio, and he was really happy that for all the work I've done at WICR. And I said, I've never worked at WICR. No. What? No, I've been at WFYI for at that time. I think it was like 12 years. And he goes, "Are you sure?"
I love that.
Am I sure? Yeah. Am I sure? Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
People will come Check's up to clear. Jeff and I all the time and tell us about the show that they loved us in.
And you weren't in
we
it?
Weren't we weren't
What was the best show you were never in?
I was good in Cats. I don't even understand how that even happens.
And you know what? I just smile and nod because it's nice that they remember, even if they don't.
And when they ask for your signature, you write Ryan Gosling.
Exactly. That is exactly what I write. How do you spell Gosling?
Gosling.
There you go. I got it.
Or as some people would say, HOT. Anyway. So Michael and I did The King and I. He was the king. And Emma, my daughter, had been cast.
Were you the crawler home? What were you?
Oh, this is good. Emma got cast originally as one of the royal princesses. One of the children.
Yeah, yeah.
So the director asked some of the dads if they would play extras, if they would play monks, if they would play guards. So, of course, I'm like, yeah, sure, why
You're
not?
You're going to be there? Why not?
Yeah, exactly. I'm going to be there. And also my mother-in-law was in the orchestra pit. So this is the first three generations Sosie Perkins thing. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm with this. After I accept, I then find out, and I forgot, think about the guards in The King and I. they're not built like me.
And they don't wear much, right?
No. So I went to Maria and I went, are you sure you want the Charles Durning of Siamese guards? I mean, nobody. No, it'll be fine. Oh, gosh, jeez. Plus, I had to get spray tanned. That's another story for another time. Yeah.
No.
I was trying not to look Ditka orange, but.
Boy, that spray tan artist earned their keep, didn't they?
By the yard. prepay. Anyway, so I'm like, gosh, I don't. So I'm talking with Michael, and I've known Michael for a while. And he didn't cut his hair, and I didn't cut my hair, thank goodness. But anyway, we were bantering, and one of the other child actors who didn't know either one of us came up and said, are you guys brothers? And I went, that's it. Mom guilted you into getting me a job at the palace. I'm not even his main guard. I'm off to the side, but I'm the Roger Clinton, Billy Carter of Siamese guards.
Story.
And I'm like, that helped justify inflicting this upon the Footlight Musical crowd. You're welcome.
You seen Michael Davis recently?
Yeah, because he was in Fiddler.
He has the most beautiful beard. I mean,
hi,
it's
Michael.
A great beard.
We both started growing our beards at the same time, mm-hmm. and I hadn't seen him for several months. And we come back, and my beard's kind of scraggly and sad, and his was like this magnificent
Chia pet.
Yeah,
just full.
I just, you know.
Do you pour water in his ear and it grows?
Exactly.
That's what it is.
Exactly.
Well, no, so that's what, but yeah, he is now forever my big brother, and that really helped because yes, yeah, so, and when you interrupt whistle a happy tune with this thing when the gut comes out first before the face, so
a memorable
that.
Performance, I'm sure.
Yeah, one for the ages. All right, Cobe, do we have the Christopher Lloyd? Not that
yes,
Christopher Lloyd, our Christopher
we
Lloyd.
Do
you have it? Is it ready?
Oh,
no,
man. I didn't have it ready.
I love live radio.
Yeah, I do too.
I love this too.
Doing our the annual show of dead people we like.
there's a pretty big one this
we
week.
We don't have time for dead people we don't like.
Yes.
Yeah, we don't. And we raise a glass and salute to Australian actor Rod Taylor, who passed away this week. Best known for, among other things, of course, The Time Machine. The original from 1960, where he played H.G. Wells, played the guy in Alfred Hitchcock's The Birds. You know him, right? Wait till you find out his last film, Kobe, and it'll knock your socks off. This is a cool one. But other titles include, he was in Giant, Raintree County. He was in the film version of Separate Tables, Hotel from 1967, The Deadly Trackers, and a lot of TV, a lot of movies. His last appearance in a film from 2009, Kobe, he played Winston Churchill in Inglourious Bastards. There's the one scene with Mike Myers and Michael Fassbender, and there's Churchill.
Right.
That's right. Exactly. That's Rod Taylor, and he was like 80 when he did that. Other films include The VIPs. I forgot they tried to make a TV series at a bus stop in the early 60s. Yeah. And the voice of Pongo in 101 Dalmatians.
Oh, of course.
Pongo, my favorite of the 101.
Exactly. So, yeah, Rod Taylor, good stuff there. But, yeah, the Mike Myers scene where Michael Fassbender, that's the kind of, that would have been like Laurence Olivier or Leslie Howard or somebody, you know, Harry Andrews, somebody older and British that has to explain what plot that the Dirty Dozen or the Bastards has to do.
Right.
And Rod Taylor got to play Winston Churchill in that. And there's on the Blu-ray of Inglourious Bastards, they interview Taylor and talks about how Quentin would show his films to the cast in their off nights. So very cool
Makes
story.
Total sense.
Very nice stuff out there. So, besides the Babadook, which way to get bonus points on that? We like that. Now that the show is up and running, are you able to watch stuff in your leisure?
I'm hoping to do a lot more of it coming up here. You know, now that everybody's back, and I mean, one of my favorite things about my schedule is I have Mondays off.
Yes,
and it's a wonderful day to go to the movies because it's all to yourself.
Pretty much, yes. And so, the old, the unemployed, and the weird.
Exactly.
And the actors.
Yes, but there's enough space, so it's
right.
Okay. Everybody has their own corner of the theater. So, No, so I'm hoping. I haven't seen the new Hobbit. That's on my list. Just
still hobbiting.
I've committed to the first two. I just have to finish.
Well, you just saw Into the Woods. You were talking about the dressing room. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Liked it?
I was kind of indifferent about it, to be honest with you.
Wow.
I was on the mess side.
Wow, because
on the mess side?
M-E-H,
yeah.
Kobe? Yeah. Because that was the one, I was like, there was a lot of folks I knew in the theater community, they had their knickers wadded up real tight. I mean, like, Les Mis tight.
Yeah.
So.
Well, see, but I did not encounter it. It was one of those shows that I just never was around. And so I knew some of the songs, and I basically knew what it was about, but I had never really seen it all the way through. And it really made me want to see it back in the heyday on stage.
Well, sure. And actually, you can, because you can on it's on DVD and Blu-ray, of course.
Right.
But
it's still not the same as, you know, that live experience. But, you know, I mean, it was well made. It was all well done. It was well produced. It just didn't strike me.
I saw the most recent Broadway revival with Vanessa Williams.
Ah.
And Jack's mother backphrased everything, which is scary
Sondheim.
To do with Sondheim. But,
yes.
But I haven't seen the movie yet.
Okay. Now,
I see kid movies.
Yes. I would say your son, Ashton.
He's almost four.
Almost four. So has he gone to a movie yet?
Yeah. Oh, his first movie, and it was Frozen, but he loved it. And now he's really into Big Hero 6. And he has such an imagination that he casts himself as a hero, and I'm Baymax.
Oh, so I am not fast.
And I'm fat, apparently. Fat.
And white and chubby and lovable.
Exactly.
Wow, that does describe
it. See, it makes sense.
La, 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 la.
And every time he does the fist bump. Yep. We have to do the
Oh,
la,
that's
la,
great.
La. Yeah, he loves that.
Well, good. Emma was four when she went to her first, so I think that's a good age.
He really does enjoy it. He sits there.
Is he a good member of the audience?
He is, and in fact, he insisted on staying through the credits, and I just wanted to get ready. I just wanted to go. And I said, buddy, there's nothing, it's just words.
These people worked very hard for your dollar.
Stan Lee comes in at the end.
Well,
and
there
I
is that.
Like, well,
there is that.
Thank you, son, for making me stay and watch the whole movie.
A few times Emma has rolled her eyes when Lynn and I are like, no, we're not getting up. No, sit down. Look at these people. They worked all, and then look at the production babies. Look at all the production babies.
Yeah,
right.
Now, at home, was there a film that Ashton would watch like every day for months?
He really liked The Nightmare Before Christmas, and he got to meet Jack Skellington at Disney World October, which was really cool.
He was a big Cars guy, too, right?
He was into Cars.
Yeah,
but
that
now
phase.
He is really into Star Wars.
Which is great.
It's you know, the Disney.
Original three, right?
Well, that's what we're moving to now, but it started out with Angry Birds.
Yeah,
Star Wars Angry Birds, and then it went
Kobe, you want to see it? You want to see it on the front porch here?
And then the Yoda Chronicles, which is the Lego version.
Okay,
and now Star Wars Rebels, which is the Disney XD. So we're building him up to The Force Awakens. We cannot wait for that to come out.
And the Hidden Fortress. Summer. No, I'm kidding.
No, that's not there.
No, you're not. No Kurosawa yet.
No, not yet. But he does love Star Wars, and so naturally he has cast that. He's Han Solo, and
he shoots.
Chewbacca.
Ashton shoots first. Yes. You are not Chewbacca.
I am Chewbacca.
Are you really?
That's me.
Yes.
There's a Jabba quote somewhere.
He's cast in all the non-speaking roles.
Right.
There's also a Princess Leia crack that I'm just going to leave.
Well, that's mommy. That's mommy.
I'm also a ventriloquist, ladies and gentlemen. So, guys, for tickets, where can people go to get tickets?
Call the box office,
which is
872-9664. And you can also request tickets online. You can't order tickets online, but you can put in a request, and then someone from the box office would call you. That's beefandboards.com, andboards.com.
Not an ampersand.
No.
There you go. So, Kobe.
Yep.
You have you been able to show Jackie Brown yet to your lovely wife?
Nope, not yet. Still working on that, scheduling the double feature of Foxy Brown and Jackie Brown with the Matt Soucy, Robert Osborne
commentary.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready. I got my tweed jacket and everything. So, all right.
And
so,
Drew Barrymore.
No, not her. Anyway, ladies and gentlemen, words to live by.
Silent breed is people!
Zardoz has spoken.
So go check out The Odd Couple of Beefing Boards. Eddie, Jeff, thank you so much for hanging out.
Thanks
and by
for
the way,
having us.
Eddie was on the very first stages of Film Sociology. We've improved since. So we thank you.
I thought it was darn good to start with.
And we even have the mics plugged in. So, wow. Ladies and gentlemen, go see a good movie. You deserve it. Stay warm. And, yeah, prosper. You're listening to Film Sociology, a film talk show here on WFYI HD2 The Point and WFYI.org.
We go. Good night, Four Myers. Good night, California.